Christian, say my name.
Okay, can we do that whole exchange? Do you know what she's like? Oh, here, let me go ahead and say it, because I've been practicing it in the movie. Bastion, why don't you do what you dream, Bastion?
But I can't. I have to keep my feet on the ground.
Call my name. Bastion, please save us.
All right, I will do it. I will do what I dream.
Moonchild. Bastion picks up the book again and continues, because despite how many instances he sees where, like, maybe this is telling of a mental illness that he needs help with, he still goes through the book.
Okay, so Bastion picks up the book again, right? It's dark. He finds in his abandoned attic that nobody's found him in yet. I would like to note the grimace in my voice.
Mm-hmm.
He finds candles and matches and lights them in the dusty old attic that nobody has ever looked for him in yet. Like, he's an only child. I know his dad is busy, but nobody's looked for him at all.
I did check in that the actor that does play his dad is Major Dad. He's mm-hmm. in a lot of stuff.
Yeah, he's got a
prolific
career. Is it like Gerald Grady?
McRaney.
McRaney. Treyu gets to the Southern Oracle, which is pretty much a rebuild of the Sphinx Gate, only they're glowing blue. So,
and sparkly.
Yeah. They also have this very ethereal voice.
They speak in unison.
Yes. And Atreus says, you must know what can save the childlike empress. And they're like, yes,
we do.
He's like, and what does she need?
The childlike empress needs a new name. Oh, that's fine. I can give her a name. I'll give her her name she wants.
No one from Fantasia can give it to her.
we're doing good. We're doing good.
Who can give her a name?
A human child.
God, I can't believe we haven't practiced this or have written down. You feel that professionalism?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, how do I find a human child?
You must go beyond the boundaries of...
You must...
Are we doing it together?
You must go.
Oh, God, sorry.
It's just...
This is what your life has become. That's what's making me crack up.
Okay, calm down.
Think of Atrex. Artex.
You must go beyond the boundaries.
It's just... Think of a dead horse. And just power through it, all right?
Okay. Okay, can you give me, like...
I don't mean to beat an Artex on this.
Okay, I really think we should do this. It's just the reason why I'm cracking up is because it's going to be hilarious when John comes in to, I mean, just if I were listening to it, I would just be like, and suddenly John is in. It's great.
You must go beyond the boundaries of Fantasia.
You must go beyond the boundaries of Fantasia.
Oh my gosh, where was I in my notes?
Okay, I was crying. I was laughing so hard I was crying. Oh, that's so good.
Okay, let's just cut to blue screen fly over montage.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, no, I can't do the theme song. You know it.
Yeah.
Oh,
That's perfect.
Thanks.
And it's one of these moments that really kind of is just sort of like, we're doing sweeping landscapes. It's a flyover. And instead of like character developing, because that's way above kids' heads.
All right. You know what we should do? Director's hat. Let's make the music way too loud and the dialogue way too soft. When I was watching this, I'm like, I'm waking up everybody in the house. And I'm like changing the volume like two or three times because I was like, oh, man.
To be fair, that's kind of prevalent even in movies today where you have like really loud music and really soft dialogue. And I'm like, dude, no. Just no. I mean, do you not watch movies?
We cut to Sebastian, who says, my mother had such a wonderful name.
I could give it to the childlike empress.
I don't remember saying that, but he was like,
oh yeah, that's not in there. Anyways, and so Atreyu and Falcor come across the nothing.
I call it the nothing vortex. their beautiful skies turn into a vortex of scary.
Right. Now, in, again, not trying to say the book is better, but in a lot of ways, they're two different medias. I'll go over this in my blog, but I did want to bring a point out. It looks like the nothing is very like cloud-like and very airy. In this specific scene in the book, they actually are going to like four wind giants who are constantly fighting, and nobody has ever seen them not fight. But because of the fact that Atreyu has the Orin, it's just one of those instances that's shown repeatedly in the book that the Orin, because it's the symbol of the childlike empress, it causes these creatures just to like stop and be respectful of whoever is there. So like, I'll talk about it in my blog, but these four wind giants, they literally stop and they tell him they do not know where the boundaries of Fantasia are, or Fantastica as it's named in the book.
Yeah, because that's the more German translation.
Mm-hmm. And then they like go back to fighting when Atreyu's just sort of like, it has no boundaries. And he's just like constantly getting hit with these things. And they like knock Falcor away, and that knocks them.
But that was too complicated to film. So we just got a wind vortex where they lose each other. They lose the pendant, and a window blows open in the real world.
Papers everywhere next to open flame.
Oh, God. You know, my firefighter's daughter's heart was like, no! Who leaves loose papers and open flame?
Right. And so Atreyu wakes up on the beach and
missing his amulet.
Missing the Orin.
And his Falcor.
And his luck dragon. And he comes across the rock biter from earlier.
Well, actually, he follows
paw prints.
Yes, but they're, yeah. I kind of thought maybe he thought they were Falcor prints, but they are definitely Gmork.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. And he follows those and comes.
Or we could debate if they're Falcor or Gmork. We'll debate which kind of tracks they are, and then the train will hit us.
If you could fly, would you ever walk again?
No.
I mean,
if it was levitation, if I had to work my wings.
Oh, yeah.
I'm lazy.
He's levitating.
Yeah. If I was a Falcor, no. No, I would just be in that room in your house waiting for you to open the doors.
I would open them up immediately.
What?
I would like always have them open just in case Naomi turns into a luck dragon that's stored in my house.
But I'm not dying in that swamp of turtle poop for you. So
my turtle will have the entire backyard, by the way.
So your 45 foot self-sacrificing co-host Falcor was going to have like a 10 by 10 foot room. I got to curl up in like a snake. And if I remember right, Wonder Boy's about 5 inches, maybe 6 inches long.
You give him more space. He'll grow. He'll grow into a mountain. It'll be a nice little swamp in my backyard. I'll stick a little Atreyu in there.
Oh my gosh.
And how do you imagine that you'll fit inside of that room? With luck. Which is apparently how he ends all of his.
Oh yeah, I hate that when he's just like, how will you get the only way to travel is with luck. You can do it with a luck dragon. I'm like, shut up.
With luck. A wink.
Don't wink him.
Sorry.
As much as I love Falcor, and I love him 98%, mm-hmm. The 2% is him winking one eye and then the other. So anyways, we're following Gmork tracks.
Yeah, and he comes across the rock biter, and this is a really, this was always the scene that stuck out to me when I was younger.
Did it give you real feels?
It gave me real feels. I don't think I ever cried at it, though. But he was like, I lost my friends because I wasn't strong enough, and now I'm just going to sit here and wait for the nothing to come and get me.
So you remember when I was like, what the fudge about that thing a couple pages of notes ago when I was like, oh no, yeah. The mirror. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh no, is the rock eater biter his dad? Because I've never lost a spouse, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's pretty common in movies and things I've watched. I've also never been a dad. So let's put that out there. You see over and over again, people who've had these great losses who felt like they were supposed to be strong enough to stop that. Often male figures, dads and husbands, who are just like, if I could only be stronger. Well, no, it didn't have anything to do with strength. You know what I mean? So as he's sitting there, I'm just like, is he a dad? Is he the dad? Because truth be told, we haven't seen dads since scene 2.
Right, right. And, you know, the way that the Rockbiter acts is actually very telling. In the book, Bastion's dad doesn't like ever really talk to him. He used to back when his mother was alive, but now he doesn't. And it's just like of all the good things in this movie, most of them come from the book. This is not a scene that is in the book. And I praise the movie for putting it in there, because if the nothing is like the sort of depression that is sinking into Bastion and causing him to like lose his grip on his childlike wonder.
Oh, that's a good observation.
Then this is pretty much that. I mean, the whole thing about the dad, that's a great observation. And this is like him, Atreyu being Bastion, confronting his dad and like them actually talking.
I mean, like I was at a solid, and no disrespect, but I was a solid 76%. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I like that movie pretty good. That's 76%. That's more than, that's a C. I can mm-hmm. take a C grade on a movie. Just personal grading.
Mm-hmm.
You just now doing that whole, that spiel, just this mm-hmm. little chunk that just happened. We might have bumped it up.
It's a B minus.
It's at least a B. It's like 80.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, girl.
I know. And that's kind of how I see this whole thing. This, I mean, not to go too much into the end because we're going to talk about that later.
We're almost on it.
Yeah. But just like, okay. So actually, let's talk about this next scene. Atreyu, after he leaves the Rockbiter, he marches on and he sees all of these paintings showing his journey.
I call this post-shadowing.
Because all of the different things that he's gone through are pretty much paintings on these walls that are in this.
Hey, kid, remember when your horse died? We thought it was so cool. We drew it on a wall for you.
Yeah, and you're in that picture, like, sad. Remember when you were that sad?
And so he sees all these images, and then he sees one of Gamork's face, and he's like, what's this? And it's actually, and then he, like, turns around, and he actually sees Gamork there. And Gamork's like, I was on a mission to go ahead and kill the warrior Atreyu, and I lost him in the swamps of sadness. Have you seen any Native American kids? That was your joke. Did you want to write it?
No. The note I just wrote was Gamork and Mindy. Because I was like so mad at the dad scene, and I was so mad that it made me think about the horse again. I was just like, I gotta come up with a joke.
You will have the courtesy of being my last victim.
I will give Gamork super props in this scene. He's truthful the whole way through.
Oh yeah, he has no reason to hide. And Gamork pretty much reveals himself as being an agent for the power behind the Nothing. And the Nothing in the movie is the lost hopes and dreams of people, of humans. And well, he pretty much says people who don't have any hopes are easy to control, and I want some of that power. And he says, I lost Atreyu. And then he goes on this whole speech. So far in my reading of the book, the whole scene between Atreyu and Gamork takes place in this entire chapter. It's chapter 9. It's called Spook City.
Nice.
And it's actually like, it's really in depth. You see Gamork, he was like, when he lost Atreyu, he started like doubting himself, and he goes to the city thinking he'd be able to find refuge because it's a city of like ghosts and demons and goblins and the dark there. What was it? The one who rules over all of them is this dark princess.
Mm,
yeah.
It's a dark princess.
Yeah. And she kind of like, you know, pets him and, you know, lulls him into this false sense of security. And he just offloads everything to her, and she's like, oh, Gamork, well, and she chains him up and she tells him, you forgot, I'm a citizen, I am a being of Fantasia or Fantastica, and everything that you've said, now you won't be able to complete your mission because I've chained you up, and no one will be able to free you from those chains because I'm going to go and walk into the Nothing where I will never come back. And it was, it's a really dark chapter. I'm going to go into more depth.
Yeah, I'm going to read the heck out of that blog post.
Oh, it's a good one. It is a really, really good one. It's my favorite chapter. And they don't, I mean, the Nothing in the book is a little bit different, but I'll go into that. So check out Lydia's blog posts or whatever I decide to call them when those come out.
Atreyu's like, now he knows that dude's looking for him. He's like, I'd rather go out fighting.
Come for me, Gamork. I am Atreyu. And Gamork's just like, ah. But Atreyu's got like this shank.
It's like a boomerang shaped sword.
Like John had mentioned in the second viewing, he got shanked in prison. And I was like, well, that's actually kind of telling because he got chained up in the book.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Well, regardless, this epic battle they're going to do is one lunge, which was, they might have done more takes or more angles, but when the animatronic came at the dude, it almost took Noah's eye out. So they were like, one and done. We're good.
Yeah.
That we got it in the can.
So this was the second time where he almost got.
Oh, I'm sorry. There's three.
Oh, okay.
Easter eggs. I'm often wrong about what I'm thinking.
That's
okay. But there's a third. Well, it's just a mention that I was thought I'd throw on at the end.
Right. Falcor. We see Falcor. He's flying through the water and he like picks up the Orin.
He's swimming. He's a multifaceted luck dragon.
Mm-hmm. And he goes in, he picks up the Orin and he like comes out and the Orin's like hanging around from one of his teeth. It's kind of adorable.
That was pretty cute.
And Atreyu's getting sucked up into the nothing. And it's like this whole like there's like a like wind. And
there's a tree. And yeah. He's holding on. This poor kid gets knocked around so many trees.
But he's
getting sucked sideways.
Then Falcor comes in, rescues him again, and they're flying through this empty space, and it's all like the last little bits of Fantasia, like little
fragments.
And Atreyu's
like, show us the way. And they do this little like color lighting thing on the amulet to like show that it's working. And
if the ivory tower still stands, please take us there. And it just is like, you know, a rock moves and the ivory tower is there.
Yay. But they also cut to Sebastian, who's eating something. And I can't decide whether or not he's eating the last couple bites of his sandwich or if he's eating the core of his apple.
I always thought it was the core of his apple. And I was like, am I supposed to eat the core of my apple?
Don't eat the core because the seeds are bad for you.
Yeah. Arsenic.
You can't feed apples to dogs. Don't do that. That's a public service announcement brought to you by Shocked and Plot.
Yeah. Okay. Falcor in the book, Falcor advises Atreyu to not call her the childlike empress, but to actually address her as Golden-Eyed Commander of Wishes.
I want that to be my name.
Mm-hmm.
Can I be the Golden-Eyed Commander of Wishes?
Yes.
You can be Falcor.
I will be Falcor.
Jonathan, you always wanted to be a Bastion.
Jonathan Brandis plays him in the next one.
Jonathan Brandis was kind of my flavor back in the day.
Yeah.
The movies get progressively more Canadian.
The second movie is from what I've read of the rest of the book, which again, I haven't read it. I've read a synopsis of how the book ends because I wanted to be somewhat prepared and getting a feel of today. But the second movie I have seen, and it's very much the movie takes elements from the second part of the book. But it's still not as good as the first movie. Probably won't be as good as the rest of the book. But Atreyu meets the childlike empress, or as I like to call her, Golden-Eyed Commander of Wishes.
It's a gorgeous name.
It's wonderful. Best name she could have ever been called.
Either things. You could draw a sword while you say, or you could throw a handful of glitter, and both would be equally effective and endearing.
Mm-hmm. You could probably do anything, like a pen. You could use a pen. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You could do jazz hands.
A hair flip if you mean it hard enough.
Yeah.
Mm.
And so Atreyu meets the childlike empress and says, I failed. And she's just like, nope. And you did exactly what you were like. And he's like, what the fuck? Like, he says, but I couldn't find you a human child to give you a new name. And she's like, but you've already brought him here. And he's like, what?
Okay, but you forget that she cadences everything with, yes, you have. No. You haven't. Like, everything is like these. She doesn't say more than like 3-word sentences for half of this conversation. And I kind of mm-hmm. wish that she would just be like, no, see, what it is he's reading a book about us, but it's actually us. And he's bringing his imagination. He's going to save us all. Mm-hmm. She's just stoic in a way that does not move the plot along.
Right.
Which I think is what Atreyu's problem is with it. He's like, you could have said this before.
Right. What is it? And she starts telling Atreyu about how he's reading this book and that there are others who are watching him.
Yeah, bringing us into it. Let's do a fifth wall. No, wait, hold on. How many walls are we at?
Fifth. Know.
And then us talking about it now is 6. And then you guys listening to it is 7th.
Yeah. It's the never ending story because it doesn't end.
Dear God, if you tell one of your friends about this part of this podcast, your brain will explode. So don't do it. That's too many walls.
Right. But Bastion, when he hears like they were with him when, and this is the part where my brain just was like, I can't do it. It was like, I can't do it. Even now, I'm just sort of like, I got to get up. I got to do something. This does not make sense. But I kind of like it.
This is this whole exchange.
Yeah. Like as he was reading your story, Atreyu, others were watching his.
You cut to Bastion off in the attic being like, what?
They were with him when he hid from the boys in the bookstore.
What could it possibly mean?
They were with him when he took the book.
I wonder if they're talking about my story.
And I wrote down, does this mean other people are watching me? Me in my ratty pajamas and cold tea on the nightstand?
I was.
In my Spider-Man underpants?
I mean, technically, we're talking about it in our podcast, and that's kind of what they were talking about in the movie. The never ending story is never ending because someone is always watching it. And it's like kind of, I mean, like if we never talked about it, it would kind of just stop.
Are you saying that you want to be part of?
We are all part of the never ending story. It makes a little bit more sense in the book. I'm just going to put that out there.
Everything makes more sense when you have unlimited pages to explain your business.
That's true. But in the book, this is the tagline. In the book.
I just want there to be a little ding every time you say it.
So Atreyu hears that Bastion's been with him, and they don't, I think they also say that, you know, others were with Bastion. And so Atreyu's just like, okay, at this point, he's kind of been told that he's already in a fictional, he's a fictional character in a story, and he's pretty cool about it, even in the book. But then the Childlike Empress just picks up and goes to this old man in a mountain who's like writing everything down in a book.
Oh, in the book. I was like, there's no old man.
I know.
Okay, sorry.
And so in the book, he's writing it out, and it's just this. Bastion doesn't actually get confronted by the Childlike Empress in the way that she confronts him in the movie. In the book, she pretty much is like, okay, I'm gonna get this taken care of. Thank you for bringing Bastion here. Now I'm going to take him to this old man and show him the reason why Bastion needs to give me a new name.
Oh, because like in the movie where it's just right. Like he just has to say my name now. Right. She just has to call it out.
Right. And in the book, she shows Bastion that the old man who he's like writing out the stories of Fantastica, and it's in this constant loop, so it never ends until Bastion says her name.
Oh,
makes more sense
in a way.
Yeah, I read it briefly. I feel like I should have done a little bit
more, because we're here to talk about the movie, and we've said it before that we take the entity, and I'm glad that you've gone further, and I would welcome you to go whatever length you feel like, but when we're like, oh, we're going to talk about this, you can.
I didn't mean for this to turn into an adaptation blog.
No, that's okay. We're changing it up. Jonathan's talking a whole bunch. I'm kicking mic stands. We're all stopping and clearing our throat every 25 seconds.
We took 500 breaks at this point.
We did. And now I just want the thing I quote from this movie more. It's not my favorite line, but the thing I quote the most often is, Bastion, say my name.
Okay, can we do that whole exchange? Do you know? She's like, oh, here, let me go ahead and say it, because I've been practicing it in the movie. Bastion, why don't you do what you dream, Bastion?
But I can't. I have to keep my feet on the ground. Call my name. Bastion, please save us. All right, I will do it. I will do what I dream.
Moonchild.
Yeah, no, he runs to the window and opens it up, and in a way that is unintelligible unless you've Googled that business. Until you've pulled up Bing, Googled, what does Bastion name the
Childlike Empress?
No, the golden moon,
the golden-eyed commander of witches. Okay, I'll text that to you so you can read through it.
The Childlike Empress, like, he opens the window and screams it out into the night.
As like wind and lightning and everything and rain is coming in. And I'm just like when I first watched this movie, I did not know what he was saying.
I didn't know.
And I thought that was the ambiguity, because there's a few moments of ambiguity in this movie.
You guys, applauders, listen to how smart this answer is, and then listen to what my brain did to it as a child. Go ahead. Ambiguity. You were ambiguity.
Okay, so there's a lot of ambiguity in this movie. And I thought that whatever Bastion's name for the Moonchild was not as important as what your name, like you as the audience listener. Because at this point, we've already been, like, it's an interactive story at this point. And so you get to choose what her name is. And that's not the case, because even in the book, her name is Moonchild. I mean, in German, it's Mondkind, something like that. I don't speak German, so, but it's like Mondkind. But it's still like, no, that's not, no. I mean, it could have been someone, no. And it just, it like wrecked me when I
thought it was so much deeper than it was.
Yeah.
But your reasoning was good enough that I've accepted it as headcanon.
Okay.
5-year-old me, or whoever I was when I remember watching this film, was like, Moira! Why Moira? I don't know. Did I know a Moira? No, I didn't.
Right.
I just thought that it was Moira.
Mm-hmm. But you said that you loved the name Moira because of this movie.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
I'm not ashamed to admit it, even though I'm weeping now.
Right. So again, Goldeneye Commander of Wishes, much better title.
Yeah. And then like a surname of Moira. You were going to say something, honey?
Oh, I thought it was Ramona.
Ramona!
don't know how you get Moonchild.
I think the ambiguity would have been better left in there, but
you got names like Atreyu, and the little elf people have these really cool names. And he's just like, what are two English words that I could join together to make a name? Moon and child, because she's a child. Moonchild.
I like
fantastic.
It.
Oh, I put in my notes, you know where he says, I'll do what I dreamed? I never connected it because for a kid, the movie is so long that he said, I had a dream about mom last night. And dad's like, shut up about your dreams.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I never realized that this is how he knew.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness. All right.
Right. And so it ends in the dark with Bastion and the Empress. And she's like, and this tiny speck is what remains of my vast kingdom. And Bastion's like, so it's just, it's all over and it's been in vain. She's like, yes, unless you take it and you start making wishes.
Okay, so another stupid part of my brain that I had to explain to Lydia is that when I was little, I thought he had to take care of this grain of sand, that it was the last grain of Fantasia, but I thought that he had to keep it all special. And I was like, I wonder if I'll put it like a necklace. I wonder if I'll put this grain of sand in his pocket. I would lose that grain of sand because we used to go to the beach a lot as a kid. I was like, but what if he goes to the beach and then he sets it down and then doesn't have that grain of sand anymore? Has to get the sand back.
Like, you're sweating about this.
This movie gave me terrible anxiety as a kid because, like, I couldn't walk through the gates. I couldn't get yelled at by my dad for not doing the things that I was supposed to do. I didn't want to get beat up by kids, and I didn't want to lose my horse in the swamp, and I didn't want to lose the sand. I couldn't do anything that they did in the film, and I was like, I don't even have a look dragon.
Meanwhile, I'm sitting there and being like, so he starts making wishes. Is this like, I mean, this is what I thought of when I was a kid. I was just like, oh, he's going to bring Fantasia back to life because he has wishes and he's going to make sure all of these things that were gone are actually back, which is actually something that happens a lot in anime. And I kind of don't hate it.
I'm down for it.
Yeah.
If somebody tells me they hate happy endings, then they can go sit on a stick because life doesn't work out like that. And that's why you should appreciate happy endings, because you get that kind of closure you're not going to get.
Right. Adult me was very much like, oh, Bastion is now becoming a writer, and that grain of sand is pretty much a blank slate, creating all of these stories, and now he gets to write his own. He's more involved with Fantasia. As we see, the first thing he seems to be doing is writing on Falcor.
Here comes the wishes, and so I started listing them out.
And the first one is
Falcor!
That's the first thing. Any kid's gonna try and do that.
Yeah! That's the most exciting thing.
I still think that if I had like one of the wishes, I'd be like, I'm gonna wish for a luck dragon who is nice.
Yeah.
Don't want a mean luck dragon.
Yeah, but mean luck sounds like mean luck sounds like a terrible anime character, really.
Yeah.
Second wish.
Oh, Fantasia comes back and
everybody everything,
Atreyu and Artax, they're running and they even wave at Bastion, and he's just like, hi guys, oh wow, they know me. And there's kind of this like moment where I was like, of course they know about him, but it's still like,
you don't like that meeting. You'd rather have them have a natural interaction than just supernatural.
It's not that. It's the fact that like everything kind of just like broke down, and like pretty much everybody's just gone. Falcor's gone, Atreyu's gone, until it's this very last thing. And
you don't get enough blooming back of the thing that was taken from you.
I don't know. It's just something is weird about it. Like maybe it's because it's just so sudden. Mm. But there's also probably this aspect that these fictional characters that Bastion has spent like the entire day with in his mind are now there. And it's just kind of, I don't know, it's a little bit odd.
Well, I will tell you my last Atreyu Noah fact. He was learning how to ride that horse for this scene.
Mm-hmm.
And he fell off and he got stepped on by the horse.
That was the that was the second time he almost died.
That's the third time he almost
died.
He almost drowned in the swamp. He almost got killed by
animatronic Gork. Wolf.
Yeah. And then he almost got trampled to death.
Yeah.
God, he's such a badass. I love Noah.
He's like, he's like what? Maybe like 12, 13?
And yeah, he's 11 or 12.
Yeah, he's faced more physical danger than I have ever had to face in my entire life.
He seems like somebody I'd like to meet.
Yeah. And so what is
number three?
What is his last wish?
I gave myself a stage direction. I said whisper. To traumatize bullies.
And this is how you know he's a nerd. He wants his wish fulfillment is to get back at the bullies who treated him bad.
The bullies are standing outside an alleyway blocking it. Then dumpster vengeance.
And then,
no, how long is this alley? Because Falcor flies down it. I mean, I don't know much about flight. I've got some pilot friends, but I'm pretty sure you have to have a certain Mach.
Mm-hmm.
Not Mach. Mach is the speed of sound. But you gotta have a certain amount of, like, you gotta go a certain distance per second to be able to maintain, inertia to maintain flight, right?
Okay.
But I suppose if he's floating, which we've talked about 27 hours ago, that I guess that doesn't matter, but he looks like he's moving fast, and this alleyway goes on forever. So my math brain that isn't fully developed, as we've all figured out, is like, he's flown past a lot of garage doors.
Middle bully totally looks like Chunk from Goonies.
He totally does.
Did you guys notice that when they got thrown in the dumpster, only two bullies' heads popped up?
Yeah, one of them ends up like falling, and the other two just leave him and go into the dumpster.
I missed the falling guy. Yeah. I thought maybe he'd had a snack.
But that is not when this movie ends. This movie ends on a line that says, "And Bastion made so many more wishes, and he had so many more adventures, but that's a tale for another day." And I know where that line came from. It came from the book. Every time. So you know how there's a lot of characters in this movie. Some of these characters show up, like Carrion, the guy who entrusts Orin to Atreyu. Mm-hmm. He, after he does that, he has more adventures, and they say that in the book. And it's like, it's kind of like to kind of like tie off his story. And so it's kind of repetitive in the book.
Oh, like this is where we're leaving this person, but it's not the end of them because their story never ends because this never ends.
Right. And so that's why they put it in, is because it was trying to, like, it's just like this really sloppy.
But it's like they were trying to throw a bone to the people who love the book.
Yeah.
But it's not established with us as the audience. So it feels like a throwaway line that right. is said by Alan Oppenheimer,
mm-hmm.
who isn't the dad, and he doesn't say it in Falcor's voice or anything like that. So, I mean, it seemed so non sequitur to me. I was like, what is this narrator about?
Can I just say something? It just occurred to me, Alan Oppenheimer, he does the voice of Gamork. He does the voice of Falcor. Mm-hmm. He does the voice of the Rockbiter. Mm-hmm. Why didn't he play the dad?
Can we have a collective
I mean, while you said that this was a C and it went up to a B for you, this was an A and it went down to a B.
Oh, no.
But it's just the movie. I have the book.
Oh man, okay. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was the entire movie, The Never Ending Story. Now we just got some closing up business to do.
Okay. I do want to say, if this ever does get remade, like the book gets made into a visual form of media, I want an anime series.
I have a sad for you. They talked about redoing this with more consideration towards the book in 2009, and it was kiboshed in 2011. Mm-hmm. So there aren't currently, to my knowledge, any remakings in the works.
That's okay. I'm just saying if they ever decided to do a remake of this with more like that, I think it can only be done as a series. I would love to see it as an anime.
You know what? I think Netflix could do a really good job. I could even do a live action Netflix. They're taking some stuff serious right now.
Yeah. Yeah. So either or. I like some of the animation that they do. What is that? The Dragon Prince. That was this little animated series that had one of the producers from Avatar The Last Airbender and Legend of Korra. And I think that even their animated studio was the animated studio that did. No, it's a different animated studio. But like the animation for Voltron looks really good. I should actually like stop and watch Voltron on Netflix. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But anime. I want this in an anime.
Yeah. Okay. So I've got some random facts that I didn't get to work into our banter that I would like to throw out at you right now.
Okay.
Okay. So until I learned about Golden-Eyed
Commander of Wishes.
Of Wishes, I wrote down, the childlike empress would be a pain to write in forms with limited boxes for names. That was way longer.
Empress, comma, childlike the...
Right? Okay. Also, if this whole thing is taking place in the realm of human fantasy,
mm-hmm.
I mean, there must be stuff we have not seen, mm-hmm. because there is not nearly enough debauchery to, even for my own personal standards, to meet the criteria of the realm of human fantasy.
I know. And the fact that everything's kind of like dying because it seems like one little boy brings it all back to life. And he was the reason why it kind of all went away.
I'd like to believe that every boy
has the entire realm of fantasy inside of them.
Right.
And so each one of them has to save the realm of fantasy inside of themselves.
Oh, so it's only his realm of fantasy and he hasn't hit puberty yet. I also learned that Tammy Stronach, the childlike empress,
right.
Her two front teeth fell out before filming. And so those are false teeth.
Yeah.
And she had a lisp until she
got used to it.
Until she got used to it. Oh, OK. Noah Hathaway is a tattoo artist.
Oh, that's great.
I believe he's in L.A.
Cool.
And I kind of want to meet him because he's the hardest worker in this entire film.
Yes.
Except for the 25 guys who operated the Falcor animatronics. Well, something from the book that I wanted that wasn't there. Okay, so no, I'll do my favorite and hate it. This is the thing that I wish was there. This is my shocked, I guess, applaud. We'll do our shocked and applaud moments. But last thing is, this was the most expensive German film ever made at the time at $27 million. And it has grossed roughly $100 million. Well done.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so do you want the bad news first or the good news first?
The one thing about the movie and even the book so far that I did not like was the name of the childlike empress. I feel like that should have been ambiguous because that draws the audience in and kind of gets them to take part. And it's ambiguous. And it's like, what did he ever say was her name? I don't know. What do you think her name should be? And that's the thing that I would have changed. I mean, is that what the shocked is?
Yeah, the thing you would have changed would be the shocked.
Okay.
I would have, instead of being like a bookworm who's just bullied or whatever, I would have kept him the fat kid he was supposed to be in the book.
Mm-hmm.
He was supposed to be fat and that's why they were picking on him. But this is just a regular looking 80s kid and he looks perfectly adorable, like a young Jonathan. And like, sorry, you had to be picked on for it almost in the movie seems because they call him mama's boy. Like they're picking on him for not having a mom. Like, what kind of piece of garbage are you? Anyways, I'd rather he was fat and they were just making fun of him for that. Because, you know, as much as that has plagued my life, I'm adult now and I don't care about it. But also, like, it's something that you can take and change your perception of or your situation with or whatever. Like, it's a universal thing.
Mm-hmm.
Making fun of somebody for, like, a tragedy that is just heartrending. Maybe leave that somewhere else. Okay, what's the best thing that makes you super, super shiny happy, that makes you want to clap your hands about this film? Maybe we talk about it with a German accent because there's so much Germany in this.
It's so difficult to like pinpoint one thing. I would say even as like an adult, it would probably be Falcor, not just because he's like a luck dragon that flies and is adorable and fuzzy and I want a stuffed representation of him in an extra room in my non-existent house. It's more because he's like constantly giving Atreyu the encouragement that he needs. But there's so much. I mean, like Atreyu being like this mirror image to Bastion. You know what? I'm going to go with the best thing in this movie is the fact that it probably breaks the fourth wall on like two levels where he goes, where others are watching him. And I was like, they're talking about me.
This is what I was about to say. I can't believe you read my mind. I was going to be like, the best thing about this film is us. But now I have to go with my number two favorite thing, which is that you can go to Munich, Germany at the Bavaria Filmplatz and you can ride the Falcor. You can get on it and have your picture taken with it. And that is now a life goal. Didn't know I had it.
Mm-hmm.
Learned about it today.
Can I put my head in its mouth?
I mean, the picture I saw didn't look like it.
Oh.
I mean, who's to say we can't try?
It was just, you know, it was like a callback to Jaws where it broke down so much that Richard Dreyfuss stuck his head in the mouth.
Oh, yeah, there's one where dude is, like, sitting in his mouth. Like, he's just, like, like, legs out akimbo, and he's, like, his arms are, like, he's just, like, hanging out.
To do like, a few pictures where you're, like, talking very pensively to him. Maybe see if they can, like, lower the eyelids of Falcor so he's looking pensive as well. So you're, like, actually, it looks like you're having a conversation with him.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
Maybe it'll just wink at you. Here's the thing, movie, you had one of those, but you did it three times, and that is not okay.
Do you just not like people winking?
I just think that a air quote adult character winking at a minor child, I just don't like it. Like I'll wink at a kid once, like if I'm like getting away with something, like if like I don't know, stick my tongue out at a kid, but I'm not being mean and I'm not being creepy. I'm just like, you know, kids staring at whoever or whatever, but I wouldn't wink more than once.
I don't think I'd wink at a kid. I would definitely like try and like make eye contact with the kid on like a, I'm making eye contact with you. And when you see me, I'm going to look away. And I'm going to do that like a few more times. And then when they look at me, I'm going to go cross-eyed.
When, if I see a kid driving their parents nuts in the store, I will, yeah, I will totally make a face or something to distract them. But I know that that is a privilege that I get as a woman and that Falcor doesn't get as a presenting dude. All right.
Right. Okay. Oh, so it's been like 10,000. I think we've been walking through this this movie for like 10,000 miles.
Hey, welcome to 2020, guys. You did it.
3,030.
Jonathan looked up at me real quick to do a fact check, and then he realized it was a joke. Such is my life. But you know what, you guys, you've been here for like months now, and I can't believe that we've gained so many followers and bought a corporate building.
Oh, I know. That's that was a trip. I mean, and then there was the whole incident with the Russian embassy. I mean, I don't really want to go through it again, but
for legal reasons, we should leave it at that. Yeah, just what's public knowledge for the most part right now. I want you, listener, dear listener, I want you this year to take care of yourself, to look out for the people you love, to, I mean, go as fifth wall as you can into your own life and see, like, who's loving you, who you're loving, and how you can do all of that stuff better, because we're here in each other's never-ending story. I mean, and I say it as a jokey thing, but I mean it.
I think there's only one way we can really end this podcast, and it's that we will have other podcasts and say other jokes, but that's another story for another time.
This concludes our review of Wolfgang Peterson's Das Boot, A Plotter. Just kidding. That was Wolfgang's film about a World War II Nazi submarine, not this children's film that he directed right afterwards. Awkward. Hey, this is your audio engineer and editor of Mixed Messages, Jonathan, thanking you for seeing us through to the end of the never-ending story. Yes, I wrote that in the script. Yes, I knew it would sound weird. Yes, I recorded it anyways. As awkward as this is to do every episode, we would like to thank you sincerely for hearing from us directly about how important your continued support is for our 2019 listener goals. Visit shockedandapplaud.com for additional links to get connected with this small Pacific Northwest review show. We'll never actually reach the end of our gratitude for your continued support as an applauder through Patreon. You make every wish worthwhile, even the ones that are yet to come true for all of us. Have you liked the nostalgic drudgery through the finest of our 80s youth? Well, you're in luck. Wink, wink. Just wait until you discover the endless faults in our stars of this February's romantic comedy episode. But before then, we'll bring you a special interview with an actual child, as Naomi interviews her nephew Lucas to bring you a boy's take on this timeless classic. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.